Bonjour et bienvenue à cette conférence de presse autour de The Beaver, un film produit par Summit Entertainment avec Participant Media en association avec Imagination Abu Dhabi Productions. Et c'est une production Anonymous Content dont le représentant est ici à cette table à l'extrême gauche, le producteur Keith Redman. À ses côtés, le scénariste du film Kyle Killen. Et à ma gauche, j'ai l'honneur et le bonheur d'accueillir l'actrice et réalisatrice de The Beaver, dont c'est la première sélection officielle à Cannes comme réalisatrice, mais qui connaît bien le festival puisque en 1976, alors qu'elle avait à peine 13 ans, 4 des films qu'elle interprétait y étaient présentés, dont bien évidemment Taxi Driver, Palme d'Or 76, qui lui a valu sa première nomination à l'Oscar avant qu'elle en remporte 2 quelques années plus tard. Mesdames et messieurs, Jodie Foster. Jodie, bonjour. On sait que vous choisissez avec beaucoup de soin le choix des films que vous mettez en scène, puisqu'en 20 ans, vous n'en avez fait que 2, celui-là et le troisième. Qu'est-ce qui a fait qu'à la lecture du scénario de The Beaver, vous êtes dit « celui-là sera mon troisième film »
D'accord. Alors, on m'a demandé de parler en anglais. Alors, je vais parler en anglais. Oui. C'est ça ce qu'on m'a dit, hein, non ?
Non, mais vous faites comme vous voulez.
Ouais, on m'a dit ça.
Ah bon ?
Non, si. On m'a dit ça. Anglais, yeah.
Faites les deux.
Je vais faire les deux. Non, ça vous enlève pas. J'ai lu un scénario absolument brillant de Kyle. Et tout de suite, j'ai dit absolument, si jamais il y a quelque chose qui se passe au metteur en scène, s'il tombe et je sais pas, il a mal à la tête, moi j'aimerais bien le remplacer.
Pourquoi?
I read the script and it was beautiful and Kyle Killen's script and I said I really hope that something happens to the director so that I can replace him. That was pretty much how I got involved. And why after 15 years? You know, I make personal films and personal films are incredibly hard to get made. They're incredibly difficult to be financed. And part of the process of making a personal film is sort of downloading your own life story somehow onto another text and melting those two things. And that takes time and energy and it has to be done right. So that's why it took me such a long time. Plus, I had 2 kids and I made a lot of movies and I had another film that was 2 weeks before shooting and got shut down. So there were a lot of reasons why I haven't made as many films.
Question au premier rang, au deuxième rang.
Hello.
Hi. I'm Yuval from Israel today.
Hello.
And I have a question as a director. You cast Mel Gibson in the last few years. You have some difficult years in Hollywood. Didn't you afraid that it will be influence, his behavior will influence the audience? Thank you.
Sure. Well, I think the first order of business is always to say who's the right actor for the role. And especially at this point, I really can't think of anybody else but Mel. He was definitely the first on my list, and I think mostly because he's somebody that really understands how to handle humor and the lightness and the charm of the character, but also has a deep understanding of the struggles and that he would keep his feet firmly placed in the drama. And I can't say that of most actors. I think most actors are either in the dramatic end or in the comedy end, and especially actors in the comedic end, I think, would have had a hard time resisting going for the comedy for the entire film.
Question là, monsieur au troisième rang.
Hi. I'm welcome to Cannes. I'm Francisco Cáceres from Ticket in Central America. I would like to ask you about your technique directing, because you're also starring. How do you approach this kind of job where you have to direct actors but also be in the scenes? What's your technique?
Well, I always say it's a very bad idea to direct and act at the same time, and you should never do that. And Mel agrees, and we laugh about that a lot. It actually is surprisingly easy to direct and act at the same time. You have a plan, you know the script very well, you've been dreaming of it and obsessing about it for so long that you do know the character extremely well. So you get exactly what you were hoping for, but I think the bad news about it is that you don't get surprises and you don't get as many choices. And that's the bad news about directing and acting at the same time. I knew when I brought Mel aboard that he's
such an he's very unneurotic as an actor, and I knew that he wouldn't have a hard time with me directing him. If it had been a different actor, I might have gone a different direction.
Monsieur Labo.
Good morning or good afternoon, Bruce Kirkland from the Toronto Sun.
Hey.
The film got a bit of a rough ride in the United States and Canada, mm-hmm. and both from critics and some audiences. At the same time, at today's press screening, there were a lot of cheers at the end of it. So, mm-hmm. do you foresee maybe having a better trip for this film in Europe and the rest of the world than it did in North America? And if so, do you see any insight into why that might be?
Well, it's a special film. It's not for everybody, and it's why, you know, it is an independent film. It's not a mainstream movie, so it wasn't designed to be loved by everybody. It tries to do something very different. It has a very high concept, an absurdist concept to it, and yet it has a very authentic and deeply emotional side as well, a comedic side and a dramatic side. It has a formality to it, a kind of European formality, and yet it's a story about an American family. It's two stories, you know, the story of the father and the story of the son, and trying to balance those two things. All of those things spell special film. And very often with American audiences, they're uncomfortable when a film doesn't fit into one particular genre. And that's just a part of our national heritage. You know, we like it to be either a drama or a comedy. So I always assumed that the film, because it does have in some ways a more European style to it, that it would be more well received in Europe, and specifically in France and Germany, I think, than other places. You know, you make movies because you love them, and you can't second guess how other people will receive them, or you'll make terrible mistakes over and over again. You have to go with the film that you love and with the choices that you've made that you believe in. And the second that you start saying the audience will like this better, the audience will like that better, you'll just make a terrible film.
Monsieur?
Yeah, it's Yanis Raouzeos from myfilm.gr. I wanted to...
Wait, hi.
Hello. I wanted to ask you, first of all, about the whole concept of the mental disturbance, the thing that you are researching quite closely in this film. As an actor, you had worked also in that concept, in Silence of the Lambs, mm-hmm. in other things. How much this concept is being fascinating you, I mean, in exploring the darkest mm-hmm. sides of human psyche, especially if in... if in the movie that you are directing, you are choosing that concept to be the main process. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, you know, actors love psychology. You know, that's why we're actors and what we're fascinated by. And the root of psychology is family. So I think I find myself fascinated by the intricacy and the details of family, the sort of tapestry of lives that come together and touch each other and affect each other. In terms of mental illness, I don't know that I've really made another movie about mental illness, actually. And Silence of the Lambs, I'm not sure that counts, but okay. Hold on, I'm trying to draw a parallel here. I can't really find a parallel. But I do make movies about spiritual crises, which is certainly what Walter's character is going through in this movie. His crises is not like a guy's going to come in a helicopter is going to come shoot him. They're not concrete crises, they're spiritual crises, which means that the film itself will always be more delicate. I don't know why I'm drawn to that. I mean, I'm drawn to this because I feel like making movies in some ways is my own way of coming to terms with my own crises, looking at it from all different angles, from every character's angle, obsessing about it, thinking about it, ruminating about it over and over and over again for years at a time allows you to move through your issues in your own life and to understand them in a more complete way. It's a healing process in some ways.
Mademoiselle?
Hi, it's Ruth from Five in the UK.
Hi.
Nice
Hello.
To see you. Mel isn't here today. How come, and are you disappointed that he's not here with us?
Well, he will be here. He can't make it for this. Is he not? Oh, he's not here?
Yes. Je devais lire un communiqué que j'ai pas lu. Il avait des obligations à Los Angeles hier. He has a commitment in Los Angeles yesterday, but he managed to be here tonight for the screening. He will arrive this afternoon.
Yeah, so he will be here.
He won't be talking, but he'll be here.
Sorry about that.
Is this working? Yeah. Farah Nayeri from Bloomberg News. I wondered if there are real-life individuals who are living through similar experiences that you might have come across or researched for the movie, because I'm not familiar with this particular strand of mental illness.
Well, this might end up being, might be a... I mean, puppet therapy is used almost exclusively on children, and especially pre-verbal children. In fact, that's almost all they use, that and games. Those are the two things that they're used for children. But I don't know any adults. I mean, I think that that was... it's actually a good question for Kyle, because Kyle wrote the script, so he can tell us what you... all the questions I don't understand, I'm giving to you.
not that I'm aware of, no. I mean, the idea was to sort of be an absurdist take on someone giving themselves therapy.
Monsieur?
Hello, it's Ninos Michelidis from Greece. You have been working as in films as an actress and as a director for some time now. Mm-hmm. And I would like to know, how do you see today's films that come from Hollywood and from America in general, from the what they have adding today for better or for worse, both from the point of view of an actor and also from a director and even from the audience point of view, especially on independent films that mm-hmm. you have worked for and where there may be more problems there. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, I'm no expert on what's happening in the movie business, even though I've been making films for 45 years. But I, you know, every phase, either especially economic phase, affects what happens in the movie business. The global economy had a huge effect on movies, huge effect on what happened in American movies, especially over the course of the last 20 years. But I think digital technology and alternate ways of viewing films is changing it, I think, eventually in a really positive direction. I don't know if it's positive this week, but I see it as an incredibly positive step towards allowing there to be more films will be viewed in the home, and very few movies will be seen eventually in the theaters, and all of those movies will be your giant effects ridden, you know, 3D, take your entire family films. But I think that's good news for us. I think it's good news for movies that are about people and that are perhaps more authentic, that they will be occupying the same screen as the, you know, romantic comedies and some of the mainstream fare that's coming out of studios now that doesn't actually fit into the new idea of what the movie theater will be.
Monsieur?
Bonjour, Le Dauphiné France. C'est une question à la fois pour Jodie Foster et pour son scénariste. À propos du castor, c'est un petit animal qui a une bonne réputation, il bâtit, il construit.
Oui.
Je voulais savoir si dans votre bestiaire fantastique personnel, il a une place. Quel rapport vous avez, et l'un et l'autre, avec le castor?
Well, that one's perfect for Kyle. Why a beaver?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's one of those things that it sort of came to me fully formed. There wasn't a question. It wasn't, it's a puppet. What puppet should it be? The minute it popped into my head, it was a man who had a relationship with a British beaver puppet. It was a whole thing by itself. I didn't deconstruct necessarily what beavers do or are or why it would make the perfect or an imperfect answer. It just felt like that's what it had to be.
But beavers do, they build things and they destroy things. And if we had done the kangaroo movie, I think it would have been a very different movie. Something about pouches and I don't know.
Monsieur?
Hello, Ben Hoyle from The Times in London. A question for Jodie. Mel Gibson puts in an amazingly brave performance in this film, particularly given the unusual overlap between some of the material and what's happened in his private life over recent years. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about how he worked on the film, how much you had to either prod him or even rein him in that performance, and how surprised you were that he put so much of it on camera?
Well, it's the great thing about it being an actor-director is I can honestly say I can't take any credit for any performance that any actor ever gives. You know, it's he really understood the character in a way that was extraordinary. I think that he was willing to go to such a deep place and willing to expose himself in some ways to really talk about something he knows a lot about, which is struggle and wanting to change, wanting to transform yourself, not wanting to be who you are. And I'm so grateful for that performance. Obviously, we had a lot of discussions before the film, during rehearsals, about choices that he was going to make, and directions that he was heading in. But that really was, you know, this performance is entirely Mel's. And I think the thing that he understood more than anybody was how important that his performance be grounded in reality and in the drama of the film. And not to be tempted by sort of easy, shticky gags that could involve a man with a puppet on his hand.
C'était facile de trouver la voix du castor?
Mel thought a lot about the voice of the beaver. I mean, in the original script, it just said English accent, and then we all decided that Cockney was the right way to go. Because it's a working class accent, and Mel's character is a rich man. He's a man who inherited his business from his father. So the beaver is everything that Walter is not. And once we decided what that was, we decided that the beaver was kind of not macho so much as masculine. You know, he was masculine, and he was vital, and you know, sexual, and. Somewhat remote from his emotions, all the things that Walter is not, that informed the voice of the beaver.
Mm-hmm. Question au fond.
Yeah.
Hello, it's Anita Singh from the Daily Telegraph in London. It's kind of a follow-on to the last question.
Sure.
Mel Gibson gives such an honest performance in this film. Do you hope, as his director but also as his friend, that this will rehabilitate him in the public's eyes in some way after... the difficult times he's had?
Oh, I don't know. You know, that's... I have no idea. I really don't have any idea about that. I know that making the film is purposive. Making any film is purposive. You know, anything that you do, that you obsess about and think about and give that much to for 6 months of your life, in his case, and for years in mine, allows you to look deeper at yourself and at the people around you, at the effect of what you do. And has to have some kind of therapeutic, cathartic end. And I know that he's incredibly proud of the movie, and I think he's proud of what he's shown, and I think he wants people to see that side of him. And he's an incredibly private man, you know, so what he shows on screen is... as deep as you could possibly get. That's our way as actors, I think, of telling people this is who I really am.
Yeah. Hello, my name is Barbara Luke from Second German Television. I have a question for Mrs. Foster. At the end, the therapy doesn't work out for Walter, and he accepts the tragedy and tries and goes on. I would like to know, what is your personal message from that?
Thank you. Well, I don't know if therapy doesn't work for Walter. I mean, what Walter needed was a combination of many things. He is somebody who's suffering from a medical condition, a real chemical medical condition, very different from what you and I might experience as sadness or as depression. Chemical depression is something very serious, and it's not because something terrible that's happened to him that he's having this. This is a medical condition. So he does need therapy. He does also need medicine. He needs time away. He needs time more than anything. This isn't something that you can just cure with a bunch of yoga or with a pill or with some kind of easy solution. And I think that was Kyle's point in the movie, that there was a much larger commitment to understanding that he had to go through. If anything, I mean, you know, our film ends on that note of accepting the roller coaster that is his life and that is his family's life, you know, part tragedy and part comedy, and accepting that there's a lot of work to be done and that this is the work that's to be done. This is just the beginning.
Monsieur Derrière.
Bonjour et bravo pour le film.
Merci.
Belle comédie dramatique. Manuel Housset de France Bleu. On a déjà vu dans l'histoire du cinéma des marionnettes qui prennent le pouvoir sur la personnalité. Notamment, on pense par exemple à Au cœur de la nuit d'Alberto Cavalcanti ou même Magic de Richard Attenborough. Est-ce que justement ces films vous ont inspiré, Madame Jodie Foster et puis le scénariste Kylan, s'il vous plaît. Merci.
So, lots of puppet movies, Magic, and there was another movie which I've never heard of before, which I should know, but I don't know. And did they inspire you? And all that?
I'm so sorry that you had to translate.
That's okay. These things are not flattering.
Right, right. And clearly, I need to be concerned about that. I was not aware of Magic until after I had written the script and given it out, and then people called my attention to it. I guess they weren't inspirations, but happy to join the club of puppet movies.
Team America really inspired me. That is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Hi. Monsieur.
Yeah, it's me again. Another question for you, Jody. Mel's character tried to solve his problem with a doll. How do you solve your problems in life, if you have any? Maybe in Hollywood you don't have problems.
In this movie, Walter takes on a survival tool. He has an untenable choice between a life sentence and a death sentence. He either throws himself off a bridge or he lays in his own apathy for the rest of his life. He believes those are his two choices. And when he discovers this survival tool that allows him to live again, and that's a third option, I think we're not surprised that he puts it on his hand. And I think we all have survival tools to get through our lives, you know. I make movies, but I mean, I'm not sure that's sort of the biggest survival tool, I think, is that I'm not good at crying in my soup about my life. It's very hard for me to admit that something bothers me or that somebody's got me or that I've been hurt. And my way of organizing my feelings is to make movies about them and to see my tragedies or various problems from all different points of view and to obsess about that and ruminate about all of those things and finally to get through the end of it and to say everything that I have to say about it. And in some ways, it's an intellectual process. It's half intellectual and half emotional. It's how can I understand intellectually all of these things that are affect me so much.
Monsieur?
Thomas Siminski, I work for the Polish Public Radio. My question is for Kyle. Is the main character's illness something coming only from your imagination, or is it based on any really real psychiatric cases? And a question très rapide à aujourd'hui, est-ce qu'on a une chance de voir bientôt peut-être dans un film français à nouveau? Et là, une réponse en français s'impose, j'imagine.
Okay, he'll go first.
It's based on a real phenomenon called a psychotic break that stems from deep clinical depression, and you reach a point where it's exactly as Jody described. It's a life or death situation, and your brain, in order to help protect the organism, does something extremely radical to offer you another way forward. So we took that radical thing and made it into a beaver.
French movies. Well, yeah, I'd love to make a French movie. Oui, j'aimerais bien faire un film en français. J'essaie de... Enfin, la chose qui m'intéresse le plus en jouant, c'est dans la jeu, c'est de travailler avec un metteur en scène qui m'inspire. Alors, ces derniers 15 ans, c'est ça ce que j'ai fait. J'ai trouvé des metteurs en scène dont je pouvais apprendre plein de choses en tant que metteur en scène. Et ma grande joie, c'est de me mettre juste à côté de leurs épaules et d'essayer de voir ce qu'ils voient et d'essayer de leur servir. Alors, si jamais il y avait un metteur en scène français très, très intéressant, c'est ça ce qui m'attirait le plus.
Et votre expérience avec Jean-Pierre Jeunet vous a satisfait de ce point de vue-là ?
Oui. En fait, la raison que j'ai fait le film avec Jeunet, enfin, je suis allée vers lui et j'ai dit, écoutez, j'adore vos films et j'aimerais faire partie, même pour un petit rôle. Alors, si jamais vous avez un petit rôle qui pourrait me correspondre, je suis là pour vous. Voilà comment ça s'est passé.
Question au fond.
Bonjour. Oui. Bonjour, Julie Lampron, CISM Radio Montréal. I have two questions. The first one is for the producer, Mr. Redman. I love what Anonymous Content does. It's really cool. So why did you choose that project?
And why did you choose Jodie Foster?
That's right.
Well, I think it was a project that was something very unique and interesting, and I think Anonymous has made some special films in that regard. It was a unique voice. As it relates to choosing Jodie, we were very protective of the material, and so when we sat down with Jodie, she was incredibly passionate and had a very specific, strong vision for the film. So, you know, when you were working with someone as talented and with the experience of Jodie, you know, the best job we could do at that point was to stay out of the way and let her and Mel show their considerable talents.
Ma deuxième question, excusez-moi. Pour Madame Foster, qu'est-ce que vous cherchez chez un réalisateur et qu'est-ce que vous cherchez en tant qu'acteur et en tant que réalisatrice, qu'est-ce que vous cherchez chez les acteurs sur le plateau?
En anglais?
As you want.
Because you're from Canada, you speak English, so I'll just do it in English. Je sais, c'est québécois.
En québécois.
C'était bien, bien fun. Tabarnak. I guess in director, I'm always looking for somebody who's a good parent. And that's somebody who's very clear about where he's headed, he or she is headed. He says, you know, the train is leaving the station at 8 and it will arrive at 9:42. But then somebody who has the other side of parenting, which is to be completely open and accepting and loving of every attempt that you make. So it's a combination, I think, of discipline and a disciplined vision and disciplined voice and somebody who is incredibly gentle with your ego and who allows you to try things and take risks and who you feel comfortable with. And then what was the flip side of that conversation?
What? Qu'est-ce que vous attendez comme quand vous êtes actrice?
I've worked with a lot of different directors. I've worked with a lot of first-time directors. I've worked with a lot of seasoned directors. Every director has a different style of directing. And it's sort of my job in the first 2 weeks of rehearsal, certainly in the rehearsal process or right before when we're starting shooting, to understand what it is that he needs in order to create his vision. So I'm there to serve him. That's always been my philosophy. The one thing that will just send me over the edge and that I have no ability to return from is a director who doesn't know what he wants and who isn't clear about the vision of the film and who doesn't have an overreaching big picture idea. And I find that very difficult to work for them. Yeah.
Est-ce que lorsque vous êtes réalisatrice, vous avez le sentiment de jouer sur les mêmes ressorts et les mêmes ressources que lorsque vous êtes actrice?
Yeah, I think I do. They're not two distinct acts, acting and directing. They are sort of the same thing for me. But I've learned over the years to sort of compartmentalize sides of myself out. Obviously, as an actor, I'm not in control of the movie, and I can't control the rest of the casting, the costumes, how the director's going to make the film. So there are certain things that I have to just compartmentalize out and say, like, I can't, that's nothing I can change. And my responsibility is really to my character and how the character articulates itself throughout the big picture. So I've learned to kind of ignore parts of directors that I don't like.
Yeah. Bonjour, Laetitia Monsacré, UGC Illimité. Je ne sais pas si vous aviez vu un documentaire qui s'appelait Boy Interrupted. où la thèse était de vouloir dire que dépression ou suicide pouvait être quelque chose de génétique. Mm-hmm. Et donc c'était très déculpabilisant et mm-hmm. voire dangereux, parce que à ce moment-là, on ne va plus chercher dans la famille ce qu'on devrait trouver, mais on va le chercher dans la médecine. Pensez-vous que votre film remette ça plus en place? C'est donc une question pour Jeudi et Kyle.
It's about she was referring to a documentary that was about the genetic predisposition for DNA, the genetic predisposition for depression, and it was interesting and it lets people off the hook in some ways for the disease, but it's also a problem because it means that. Why is it a problem? Because people are going to look into their... because they're not taking responsibility in some ways for it.
Et dangereux aussi.
And dangerous because of that. I mean, there is a genetic predisposition for depression that we know. It does travel in families. But like everything else, which I, you know, it's the same news in every single medical or psychiatric discovery. Your genes work with your environment. And I don't think anybody's, I hope nobody's saying that all depression is a gene, you know, and that if we could just repair that gene or get rid of that gene or not make babies with that gene, there would be no sadness in the world. Obviously, the ability to have emotion is a part of the human animal. I mean, that's what distinguishes us and makes us beautiful, distinguishes us from other animals. Chemical and medical depression isn't just garden variety sadness. It's something, you know, much darker and very different from that. I answered that one for you, sorry.
That's fine.
Yeah. No, il veut pas répondre.
Do you want to talk about it?
Well, I would just say I think there's a big difference between explaining and excusing something. Mm-hmm. I think that it's right and useful and helpful to understand the nature of depression. It doesn't make the effects any easier to deal with, but understanding that it comes from a real and chemical place helps you understand what it is that you are up against. It doesn't give you a free pass for the behavior that results from it.
Another thing which I always like to mention about the movie that I like is that, you know, it's not a disease of the week movie. Obviously, the film does deal with a man who's caught in this cycle of a sort of bipolar cycle between mania and depression. And but it's about all sorts of things. It's about grief, and it's about a father and son relationship and what we do to each other and the need for connection. The films that are about specifically about diseases are just so much better served on television than they are in film.
Mademoiselle?
Deborah Cole from AFP News Agency. Hi. You talked about what Mel Gibson brings to the table as an actor and why you chose him for the role, but you've also been extremely loyal to him publicly when mm-hmm. he's had a sort of rough ride in the press through the as you said, mm-hmm. the struggle that he's had. So I was wondering what that loyalty is rooted in, you know, what, mm-hmm. what it derives from, and how it influenced the work on this film.
Right. Well, I'm not responsible. I can't excuse Mel's behavior. I mean, only he can explain that. And, you know, we're all responsible for our own behavior. But I do know the man that I know and who's been a friend for many, many years and somebody who is probably the most loved actor in Hollywood that I can think of. Chow Yun-fat is the other one that I've worked with that I think is the second most loved actor in Hollywood. As a friend, he is kind and loyal and thoughtful, and I can spend hours on the phone with him talking about life. And he's complex, and I appreciate his complexity and what his complexity brings to his work. You know, this is an extraordinary performance, and I could be, yeah. I am nothing but grateful for that and for what he gave to this movie. Without, you know, I mean, just he just gave from his heart, you know, without asking for anything in return.
Monsieur?
Hello. Hello, I'm Ernesto Garrat from El Mercurio de Chile. I want to ask you two things about first the young cast, Jennifer Lawrence and
yes.
who was working with them. They are very good. And the other thing is, during the work with Mr. Mel Gibson, did he stay in character all the time? I mean, he was speaking like the puppet all the time, inclusive when the camera is off. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Anton Yelchin, Jennifer Lawrence, were wonderful. Very different actors. Anton Yelchin's been around for a long time. He was a child actor. He's been in very big movies like Star Trek and Terminator. He has a very different way of working. He likes to write tons and tons of memos, and he likes 30 takes, and he likes to do everything 100 different ways. And Jennifer Lawrence comes from a very different background. She's done mostly independent films, and although now she's done X-Men and is moving into Hunger Games, she's in some ways much more purely instinctual. She likes to do it very few times, and we tried out many, many, many girls for the part. I'm close to 100, I think, and they were all amazing, amazing actresses, and I see them today all over, but for some reason it wasn't working. And Jennifer sent in an audition, and I saw her and was so intrigued by her. I saw bits and pieces of her movie, The Bones.
Winter's Bone.
And I was so moved by her that I said, wow, this is the actress that I'd like in the role. And now we have to change things for this actress. And I think Kyle and I went back, and we really re-looked at the character and tried to come up with a character that in some ways was more right for Jennifer, and that resolved some of the issues that we were having with that part of the story. In character? No, he would go to the dry cleaners before we started shooting, and he would do the puppeting thing, and sometimes he would make jokes to the crew in his puppet accent. But no, he's pretty compartmentalized, kind of the same way that I am. He's able to kind of turn it off and turn it on.
Mademoiselle?
Sandra Apenu from CFI and reporting for TV3 Ghana as well. Mm-hmm. My question is to Judy Foster. My first question is about The Message. It's quite a hilarious movie, but it's got some kind of message in there. In short, what kind of message are you trying to preach in this movie? And secondly, about Mel Gibson's attitude, his especially concerning comments about the Jewish community and all that. You took the risk and then you went ahead with this movie. Mm. And then when the movie was premiered back in the US, in the box office, it didn't do quite well. Mm. And so how do you hope to recoup the money that has been invested into this movie, especially trying to market this movie in America? Thank you.
That's a bunch of different questions. What was the first one? Do you remember? The second one was about Mel.
Message.
Oh, and the message of the movie. I hope I'm not preaching messages, because that would be really obnoxious. I try not to preach messages in my movies. But I think if there's one thing that you're left with in the film, is a film where it's about characters who are longing to connect and don't know how. And in some ways, the vicious cycle is that they are, especially Walter's character, a solitary character who is too depressed to connect, and yet it's connection that will heal him. So I think that that's, if there is one final thought in the film, the idea that you don't have to be alone, that being alone is a choice that we make, to isolate ourselves and to disconnect from the world and to disconnect from the people that we love, and that you don't have to be alone, and that connection will save you in some ways. His impact on the box office. I think this is a good question for me, but also a good question for Keith, since he's the producer. The beautiful thing about being a director is that you get to make a movie, and it's so hard to get to make a movie. Yeah, virtually impossible. I mean, you guys will see this week so many directors that have given up so much and sacrificed so much in so many years just to try and get a movie off the ground. And there are so many that don't get their films off the ground, that you just can't help but be giddy and happy that you made a movie that you love
that you stand behind and that you believe in. And that's really the greatest reward that you could possibly have. I think I've learned over the course of 45 years in the business that if you gauge your self-worth on whether on your box office, you will be a very sorry person. I am not my box office, so I can never be anything but really grateful for this experience of being able to make a movie that talks and walks and exists and will exist on DVD and will have many, many years in people's lives for them to see it and to talk about it. Box office.
I think, you know, what Jody said earlier, the movie isn't for everyone, and I think we went into it knowing that. I think that the short answer to your question is time. I think this film is a very special film, and it's a discovery. And I think as people have time to read more, hear more, and word of mouth, that I think that people will ultimately see the film. And there obviously is not just about the box office. There are many ways to recoup money and investment. But we're very proud of the film and as a piece of art. And so I think the box office, while of course it's important, we knew going in that it was going to be an issue of time rather than just, you know, the first weekend.
Monsieur.
Hello, Christian Lindberg from Danish newspaper Berlingske. My question is for Jody. There are a record number of female directors in the competition this year, even though it's only four out of 20. But I would like to ask you, do you feel that more should be done to advance the female directors in movie business, or should you more advance movie art?
Well, there's always been a good chunk of female directors in Europe. It's not really been Europe's problem as much as it's been the United States. We also have a really good chunk in the independent industry of female directors. The one area that is slower than any of the others is mainstream movies. And I think that's because I don't believe that there's a plot, that somebody set out a plot and said, don't hire any women directors. I think that it's psychology. It's almost like race psychology, where you have a group of people that are an incredibly risky job where there's a lot of money on the line, and there's corporate concerns, and there's financiers, and they want to be the most risk-averse that they possibly can. And for some reason in our culture, women represent some kind of creative risk where they are scared that they won't get their money back. And that includes female producers and female studio executives, of which there are very many. There are lots now. That's changing. I think it's changing, you know, with every Catherine Bigelow for The Hurt Locker and with every advance in that arena. But it's interesting, of course, you know, that, and it's a movie that I adore, but it's interesting that the first female director who's been acknowledged by the Oscars is in a male genre, you know.
Monsieur.
Rebonjour, c'est une question pour Jody, Olivier Bonnard pour Le Nouvel Observateur. Question en deux parties. La première, vous avez très souvent interprété des mères courage,
oui.
Y compris dans ce film-là, il y a Flight Plan, Panic Room avant et puis d'autres. Mm-hmm. Je voulais savoir d'où ça vient et est-ce que votre maman était elle aussi une mère courage? L'autre partie de ma question, c'est un film sur la solitude. Mm-hmm. Et je voulais savoir s'il y a un sentiment auquel vous pouvez vous identifier particulièrement. Est-ce que la célébrité accentue la solitude ou est-ce qu'au contraire, elle la combat? Merci beaucoup.
Ah, une très bonne question. Yeah, I've played a lot of brave mothers and pillars of strength, I think, and in this film, but in many others, I think. And that's been my experience of women in families. In this film, interestingly, the men are unstable psychologically, and the women are the pillars of strength, which is not the way usually films go. But that must be my experience, I think. That must be how I see them. I think the casting of Jennifer Lawrence immediately, there was something about her strength of character that reminded me of Meredith. And I wanted, in some ways, those two women to resemble each other. What was the other one?
La célébrité.
See, I can only retain one thought at a time. Yes, la solitude de la célébrité. I actually, I do think that that's, I don't know if it's about celebrity, but I think it's, it definitely is a function of how I grew up. Little Man Tate, which is about a child prodigy, he's not a celebrity, but he's a child who was born alone in some ways with that solitary quality. And what I've found in my life is that there's something that I adore about aloneness because it's creative and it belongs to no one else but me and nobody can take it away. So if I'm lying in a pool of fake blood at 3 o'clock in the morning in Prospect Park, somehow I find myself doing that a lot. I can have 75 crew members around me, but there isn't really one person who really understands what that experience is. It is a completely solitary experience. And there is something beautiful about that, that I long for, but something incredibly lonely about it as well. And I think all actors and all artists in some ways are held in that same thing, you know, of loving the loneliness of it and loving the and hating it at the same time.
Monsieur au deuxième rang, et ce sera la, la dernière. Non, on a le droit à une question encore? Non, je pense que ce sera la dernière question, monsieur.
Hi, Absach from the Netherlands. Yes. You just talked about strong women and how difficult it is to make films nowadays. Mm-hmm. What happened to your project on Leni Riefenstahl? Because it was also controversial, but
yes.
Why didn't it work?
I just never got the script right. And that is one project that if you don't get the script right, you should just not make it. It was a very difficult project. And I worked on it for many, many years. And then I just couldn't get it right. And now I feel like I'm too old to play her. So hopefully someone else will play it. Somebody else will make it someday.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci
et bonne projection ce soir dans le cadre du festival.